everyone, and welcome to episode 92 of season 11 of Movie Reminiscence, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again in order to finish off his three-episode arc is Leighton Hughes from the We Happy Few podcast. From the We Happy Few 506 podcast. I apologize for that, Leighton.
Sorry about it. Fine. I'm not hurt. I'm not crying. Welcome. Thank you.
I corrected myself within enough time, so that works. I didn't do that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
No, thanks for having me back, Rob. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me back.
No, I appreciate it. We're right now. How can we stop talking about what's going on in Foy? You know, it's just it wouldn't have been fair to you if we would have cut it off, beforehand. You know, because I know you like talking about these things. And from have you been to Foy? Have you been to this area?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
I've been a few times.
Exactly. So you know, what better person to talk about it than someone who actually was there? So that makes sense. So episode 92 begins with Dyke continuing to keep causing problems and ends with the Germans beginning to retreat from the counterattack. So we've reached the point where, yesterday Dyke was leading the men, or I don't know if leading is the right word. He was running with the men, through the open field in order to get the Foy, and he started getting a little confused along the way and stopped everything, and just stopped everyone in their tracks right in the middle of the field, which is one of the craziest things that can be done. And he screams, "Second platoon, hold up!" And then we see an explosion, and then Dyke goes, "Will you move? Get me Foley on the radio." And Winters sees this, from the edge of the tree line, and he is furious. And he just starts screaming, "Get out of there! Move!" And, one of the guys says to Dyke, "Sir, I think we should take cover." And Lip just starts screaming, "Find some cover! Find some cover! Find some cover! What? Stay down!" And we see Luz on the radio. "Easy red, easy red, easy, six, over, six, easy red, go ahead, easy red, stand by for the six." And Dyke just starts yelling in the direction of where Foley is. He goes, Foley, you get back here where I can see you, god damn it. And Foley realizes that, he doesn't have a choice, and he goes, "First platoon, hold up, take cover." And then he calls out to Martin, and then Martin goes, "Come on, soldier, with me." And, we see that Martin and one of the guys tries to get closer to where Dyke is. And, we see the German artillerymen getting ready to shoot at them. And, they're just blowing these guys to bits. We see that the German artillery shoots back. And Dyke then just, sort of gets a hold of himself and screams, fall back. And Lip screams, "Take cover." And, once again, Winters is watching this bloodbath from the edge of the forest. And he's screaming, and he goes, "God damn it, go forward." And Lipton then turns to one of the men next to him and goes, "Heron, on me, move back, stay on my ass, hold fast, second platoon, and follow Lipton, take cover." You can easily see that Dyke is just completely confused at this point. And then then Lip says to him, "What are we doing, Lieutenant? Why are we stopped?" And Dyke goes, fall back. And he goes, "Roger, kidnap, stand by the six, Heron." And then someone else goes, "Lieutenant, what's the plan?" And he goes, I don't know. And Winters again is just looking on at this furious, and he goes, "You better get Dyke on that radio to me now. Lieutenant, what's the plan?" And, Luz then hands the radio towards Dyke. And he goes, "Captain Winder, sir." He goes, "What's the plan?" Okay, Foley, you take your men on the flanking mission around the village and attack it from the rear." Lip screams at Dyke, goes, "Dyke, we cannot stay here." And Foley responds and goes, "You want First Platoon to go around and attack the village by itself?" And Dyke goes, we will provide suppressing fire. We're going to be kind of alone out there, Lieutenant. We will provide suppressing fire. And then Foley takes off in the direction where he needs to go. And, you know, Winters is again looking at this from afar. And again, he is he doesn't know what to do here, because, you know, as we've talked about before, Winters really cares about these men, and he sees that the men that he cares about are getting, you know, slaughtered by the stupid decisions of Dyke. And Dyke is just you know, he's out of it. And they actually shoot this really well, because, you know, we see the various soldiers talking to Dyke, asking for what they're supposed to do and stuff like that. And it's shot in a way to make it seem as if Dyke is probably a little out of his mind, you know, because they're, you know, it's as if their faces are getting closer to him, you know, maybe like in a 3D perspective or something like that. You know, again, we talked yesterday and Friday about, you know, whether they portray Dyke in a good or bad way here, but you know, this has to be, this scene has to be played out the way that it is, in order for us to see what we're going to see very shortly.
No, absolutely. And you know, whether it's rightly or wrongly portrayed, you're right. And what you just said then is just that camera work that they used in Saving Private Ryan, I think, with Tom Hanks, but they've sort of done it in a different manner, haven't they?
Well, when they did it with Tom Hanks, it was because he was shell shocked because he was on the beach.
Shell shocked
on the beach from having an explosion right nearby him, and you know, not having lost his hearing, I guess you can say. In this case,
yeah, a little bit, yeah, and I think he was sort of that little bit of PTSD as well, isn't it? Because I think, if I remember rightly, he'd been to Africa, he'd fought in Africa, if I remember rightly, with Tom Sizemore picking up dirt.
Yeah.
Putting her into his tins, so I think it's a little bit of everything, isn't it, really, of that sort of, you know, battle fatigue element. But and they're sort of doing it with Dyke, but they're doing it in such a way now where it's now panic. So it's actually, I feel like it's, that's what, when I first saw it, that's what it reminded me of. It reminded me of Tom Hanks, Saving Private Ryan, but they've used the camera work in a different manner to still have the same effect, which is brilliant that they can do that. And you're right, it's very 3D, isn't it? It's very
it's
isolated as well, you know, where you've got Luz. Yeah, it's very, you've got, you know, 1 minute you've got, you know, Foley asking questions, and you've got Luz putting the radio in it, and then you've got Lipton asking, you know, for you know, it's just what you just said then, it's very, and very, very well done. And it's the panic, and it's given, it's feeding back into Winters, isn't it? As you just said, it's feeding into what comes next. It feeds nicely into that. And, you know, having, like we said earlier, having been to Foy, I have been there. I'm just trying to remember where it is, because it's very different to where a lot of people go to when they go to Foy or Foy. There's a, the lovely Regians corrects a lot of people. It's because a lot of people, you know, with the foxholes, when you go to Bastogne or the Bojack, the people go to the Easy Company foxholes, which I'm not a big fan of. One, they fenced it off, but also two, when I first went there, I thought it was the foxholes which overlooked the town of Foix. And that what it was when I first went in 2009. And having went with Regian, you know, he really explains it all to you, and he does a magnificent, I've forgotten, and he actually, you know, dictates how the attack happens. Or I say he dictates, sorry, he explains, he with all his wonderful hand movements, narrates, that's the word I'm thinking of, yeah. And but a lot of people think that, you know, they go from the foxholes, but the fenced off foxholes, which a lot of them have been redug by reenactors over the years. They think that that's where they sort of move off from, but it's actually further down. So I'd love to, I'm trying to visualize it in my head of the actual set off area and visualize it all, because there's so many moving parts as well. But again, this comes down to really good writing by Graham Yost, I believe. and to have it all condensed into, where they're all together, where they're all, if I remember rightly, they were quite spread out, and it's television, isn't it? It's not a documentary. So no, it's really interesting, when they're advancing as well, the advance, it puts you there with them because you're cheering, you're, for me, you want to cheer them on. I say cheer them on, that's wrong.
No,
You want to
you want
encourage
them
them,
to
sorry.
succeed. That's what it comes down to. Yeah.
You're pushing them. Yeah, you're pushing them on yourself. You're like, come on, move faster, move faster. Listen to Winters, he's telling him to move faster. Don't stop, and then you're sort of screaming at the television when he does stop, and you're thinking to yourself, you're there, aren't you? With, and that's, I think that's down to the writing, and I think that echoes, with the excellent writing
It's also
echoes
the excellent direction.
with
It's a
Graham's
combination of the
CV.
writing. It's the
Say
writing
again,
and the
sorry.
direction.
The directing, yeah. I can't remember who directed it.
I think it
I don't
was
think it was
Frank
David
Lee, wasn't
Leland.
it?
Oh, is it David Nettle or the? Oh, you got me thinking now.
This one was David Frankel. Yeah.
Oh, David Frankel. I think he's quite a distinguished director as well. I think he's got quite a resume, and I think when you see those types of high profile writer directors, you really see the quality of what is on screen, and I think you're seeing that here because they are really bringing you in into it, aren't they? And yeah, you just feel part of the battle. You feel you're part of. You are there. You are one of the men of Easy Company, you could say, because you are telling them, "Hey, move." You're effectively every man in that company when you're
Well,
watching it.
that's the point. The point
Your
is for us to
Winters.
actually feel that,
Yeah.
and
Yeah, and I think you are. You're the leadership from above, shouting to move forward, don't stop. You're the guys, the officers leading the charge, or dictating the charge, or coordinate the on the ground. You're confused, and then you're the guys at the front of the, this, tip of the spear, where you're like, what's going on? What are we doing? So yeah, you're part of the story, I think. And I think that's, yeah, it's a great
Yeah,
episode. It's a
and I
great
mean,
scene.
part of the whole thing is I think it also is written and directed in a way where obviously, we're anti Dyke at this point. We're it's Dyke's the one in charge and nobody understands why he's acting this way. And as a viewer who's immersed in it, you get angry at Dyke also. So again, it goes back to what Graham said, when I spoke to him, that he wishes that he would have possibly changed the name or something like that, or toned things down. But the thing is this is perfect because of the way that it's portrayed, because that's what you want. You want the viewer to be so entrenched in what's going on that they're looking at it and they're, as you said, yelling at the screen and yelling at Dyke, "What are you doing, you stupid idiot? You're killing men." And it's the same thing that Winters is saying, the same thing that Lip is saying. Everyone is trying to figure out how do you get out of this type of situation.
And going back to that point, I think we said on the last one, changing the name, a little bit of digging into history, reading the books, you're going to identify Dyke straight off the bat. So changing his name isn't going to change anything. So yes, I can imagine them having that thought. I'm saying, should I really? This is a real person. But again, the people, they're going to watch the show. They're going to then, a lot of people who watch the show, they read the books. Or people who read the book and watch the show, they're going to know who they're on about. So why change it? Why change that name? Because it's going to be easily found out. And then you've just got this, not just possibly an inaccurate portrayal, but you've got a different name. And Band of Brothers, yes, it's not a documentary, but it's
Right,
portraying
and
about
they
real
did their
men.
best to be as authentic as
And
possible. Despite obviously adding in,
yeah, absolutely. And I
adding
think
things
with
that
Dyke.
amalgams of various characters and things like that, but in general, the job they're doing here
Yeah,
is to
that's.
try to make give us an accurate portrayal of everything that that these men went through and what they did.
Absolutely. You just made a great point as well. Yes, there's an amalgamation of characters, but it's still the real people, if that makes sense. And those things did happen. So you just they're just fine-tuning a story to incorporate the characters that they are featuring rather than one-off characters, you know, who might have one or two lines, and it becomes confusing. But with Dyke in that scene, particular scene you just showed there, he's clutching his right shoulder, and it looks like Lipton is leaning, pressing something on him. And I've heard that I heard that, I know, I think it was Joe Muccia who said that he got hit. He was shot or caught some shrapnel in his shoulder, which has obviously added to the confusion. You know, so that, and just watching it then in that bite size, and even pausing it for a moment, here, you know, you see Lipton holding something, and I have seen it over the while. So part of me wonders if they have subconsciously incorporated that in. They knew about it, and they wanted to sort of, well, we know this happened, but we're also adding to the confusion of him.
That's
I don't
actually
know.
great.
I'm
I you
do you know
know
if
I
I'm
think
getting that
that
across
fits
right?
in really, really well, and that makes a lot of sense that they would do it that way. So yeah, understandable.
But you haven't seen him get hit, but all you're doing, you're seeing him clutch his shoulder. So for the, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, I wouldn't say the eagle-eyed viewer, because it is, I'd say it is quite obvious when you, once you've seen it. But yeah, it makes you wonder if that was done. I'm just trying to look at the script now to see if that is in there as well. But no, it's a great scene. It's a phenomenal piece of camera
And
work as
then once
well.
again, we're back with Winter screaming, "Get going forward!" And Les, you know, points the radio at him and goes, "You need to talk to Captain Winter, sir." And he goes, "Sir, okay, here it is. We go on a flanking run around the back of the village, and we attack from the rear." And then, the few of the guys start running off, and one of them gets shot as they're running. And you know, we see Martin then goes, "Ramirez, two guys, take them, go. Find some cover behind the stable. Go, go." You know, and they run off. And then, you know, we see one of the guys get shot. Shit. Jesus Christ. Webb, move up, find cover, suppressing fire, now. And we see Percanti gets hit. And Martin calls out to him and goes, "Percanti." And he goes, "I got you." And Martin goes, "Give me some cover." And he's able to pull Percanti to safety. He goes, "How you doing, Percanti?" He goes, "They shot me in the ass, Martin." He goes, "You're all right. Stay down. Stay down." And then Foley gets on the radio and goes, "I think we lost five men. Can you locate?" And Lip goes, "The building with the caved-in roof." Les goes, "The building with the caved-in roof." And then we see a shot of that roof itself. And Lip turns to Dyke and goes, "Sir, we are sitting ducks here. We have to keep moving." And then, you know, we see Winters once again, you know, from afar screaming, "You gotta keep moving." And I love the way that they do this, that they're, Lip is saying something, and then we see that Winters is saying almost the exact same thing. So it shows, the idea of leadership, that, these guys who are leaders, who are dealing with all this stuff, they have the same feelings about everything that's going on and the same reactions and stuff like that. So it works really well the way that they do that.
I know it's excellent, and it's one of my favorite, you know, I think it's quite that line, you know, building with a caved in roof. I always remember that as well. I don't know why that line always stuck with me over the years. You know, I see a building with a caved in roof. I don't know why it's weird. That's one of those weird things. And it is, you're right, it shows his leadership, you know, that, you know, and I think with, you got to give it to Dyke as well. You know, he's panicked. He's probably forgotten what Winters told
Well,
him
as
in the
we talked the
build
other
up
day, he
to the
wasn't really paying
attack.
attention. So there isn't much to forget if you're
Yeah, and
not
now
paying attention.
he's yeah, and he's and now he's having to make decisions. You see him making decisions, which is what leaders should be doing. But if you just listened prior to that, and you know, did what Winters had told him to do, then there would be no panic. He'd have that structured attack in his head of, this is what we're doing. But now he's having to think on the cuff. So at least he is making decisions now, but possibly because of his like his back is away from the battlefield. He can't see what's in front of him to a degree because he's behind the haystack. And obviously that state of mind, his mind is running at 1 million miles an hour now. So at least he's making some decisions, as yeah, is what I'm saying. May not be the best ones, but at least he's making
Right.
decisions, you
That's
could
true. He's
say.
making decisions. You're making bad decisions. You know, that's.
But yeah, well, that's it as well. Like, this whole scene can
Yeah.
be a lesson on leadership
Right. And
itself.
before we move back, right,
Because
before we
if
move
you
back
just
to
listen to the film.
Winters, so it's very interesting the way that the shot is where we see Lip talking to, or I don't know if talking is the right word, trying to snap Dyke out of it. You it looks as if the camera's focusing on Dyke's ring, which is very interesting because
All right.
it looks like a West Point ring or something like that.
Yes.
B basically trying to show that, I mean, my interpretation of it is okay, just because this guy might be an officer candidate slash graduate, from an elite, group of men, doesn't necessarily mean that he can lead men properly.
No, absolutely. And I think you could say that about a lot of officers. You can go back to Sobel. Great training officer, but maybe he's not best suited for the infantry.
Right.
And obviously, he ended up as a training officer at Chilton Fowlie, and then he became a supply officer where from all accounts, he excelled. So it's actually quite interesting that, just because he went to West Point, that actually means nothing when it comes down to character. I obviously can't comment about what they learn in West Point and what is taught, what they absorb, and various things, leadership exercises. But again, it's a school environment, it's a controlled environment, so they could probably get away with a lot of stuff. And if he's got friends in high places, that could also dictate how easy he gets a pass. But yeah, no, that's a really good point. Just because you've gone to a prestigious school doesn't mean you're well educated, doesn't mean you're those leadership qualities are there, and it's obviously shown with him. And maybe it's because Winters didn't go through that route. I think Winters joined the army as a private.
Correct.
I don't know if you knew that.
Yes, I knew. He rose up in the
And
ranks.
he, I think he became a corporal, I want to say, quite a short period of time, and then he went, is it the ROTC route?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure.
So maybe that's again. They're showing that relationship of I'm West Point, you're I don't know whether what the Americans or you guys call those type of officer routes. They're not as distinguished, not as prestigious. You're ROTC, I'm West Point, I'm not going to listen to you, I know what I'm doing type of attitude. Maybe that's what they're trying to show as well.
No, I think they're trying to just show the difference between learning something on paper and learning something in the field.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean.
That's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
You
Because,
know, again, that doesn't say that everyone who goes through West Point isn't able to do these type of things. It's personality. All connected personality anyway.
Oh, absolutely. I think leadership is a personality driven quality as well. You have some people who abuse that power. You have some people who, who use that power for good, and then you have what Dyke's being portrayed as. Yeah, I'm gonna just do what I
Dyke's
want
being,
anyway.
again, Dyke's being portrayed, and they've mentioned it that he's here to serve his time in order to be able to move up the ladder. That's what it comes.
Move up the ladder, yeah, get that combat experience that he needed. And it just so happens it came at a point when Easy Company were being tested, and but again, this is it's I think again, there's people who will know a lot more than me on Dyke, but apparently he did incredible things, I believe, in Market Garden and early elements of the Bulge. So I think maybe just that battle fatigue has kicked in. So who knows? And maybe Winters just saw the worst of him,
Could be.
and documented it that way.
Right, it's very possible. And then
Yeah.
we're back with Winters, who's just looking in despair as to everything that's going on. And he takes it. He unstraps his rifle as he's screaming, and he goes, "You got to keep moving," and starts running forward. and he's snapped out of it by Sink, who just goes, "Dick." And he goes, "Captain Winters, God damn it, you do not go out there. You're the battalion commander. Now get back here." And, you know, first of all, for him to sternly yell at Winters in front of everyone else is already, you know, something. You know, this was a necessity from Sink's perspective. You know, I don't think, based on what I know of Sink, he didn't do it in order to try to disparage Winters in front of everyone. He just didn't have a choice.
No, you had to, yeah. You could see it was getting out of control.
That's right. Because, you know, we see that what Winters is doing here. And Winters is, you know, there isn't much there isn't much that he could have done in this particular case besides yelling at Winters this way. For better or for worse. You know, from
absolutely, yeah.
And then when Winters gets closer to him, and then he says to him in a calm voice, and he goes, "Now, Dick, I understand your attachment to Easy Company." And, you know, Winters acknowledges that he's being spoken to, but that's about it. He doesn't do much after that. And he just turns and he goes, "Spears, get yourself over here." And he calls out to Spears to get closer. And when Spears shows up, Spears runs over to him and he goes, "Get out there and relieve Dyke and take that attack on in." And Spears just runs off. And that's it. You know, there's no hesitation whatsoever with Spears, which again is amazing.
Yeah,
the way
I love Spears.
Yeah, so do I. And I love this whole scene. This is actually among my favorite scenes in the entire miniseries because of the way that it's portrayed. You know, that Winters wants to be able to save Easy Company as much as possible. He wants to go do it himself. He's been stopped. And as soon as he was stopped, he just takes the closest guy next to him, which he knows is a great officer, and decides, "All right, this is what we're doing. You know, I'm sending him in to go take over because he's someone who I know I can trust."
Yeah. No, I love Spears. Yeah, his whole character, he's a bit of a maverick, isn't he? And that we saw glimpses of Spears in episode 2 in, you know, Protocol Manor, and that he's got an idea in his head, he's got a plan, he knows what to do, and he just does it. And you could say that he doesn't always necessarily think of the dangers that are going to be associated with his plan, but he's just got an idea. And good or bad, you could say, people follow that. People love that confidence because it's confidence that he's showing as well. And yes, it got people killed, the Brickell Manor, as we saw. But fundamentally, though, he he's a good leader as well. He has a stand. He's just do as I do, not do as I say. But I could say do as I say and do as I do as well. And we saw that. And I think he probably, you know, I think I he earned a lot of respect where he parachuted in, pun intended, by the way, with this, where he charged down the line. You know, he could see what's going on. He knew what needed to be done, and he knew that the situation needed to gain control of that situation. And it's that type of character you want. And also, as well, he needed to show them to be I am a leader. You will follow me. So him doing that, where he runs down, communicates. Let me just get this. You know, I'm just going to catch up. You know, where he talks to Dyke, where Dyke is just, he's gone. He's, you know, he's there, he's standing up, he's looking, he's listening to Lipton, the first sergeant, who's obviously telling the situation. So he's already got an overarching perspective of what is going on the ground. He's got down there. He's got a quick sit rep off Lipton, but you can see him if you go back, you know, when he gets that hay bale or the hay, he first of all relieves him, and he does it in such a way, it's very respectful, you know. But as he stands up and he's talking to Lipton, if you look at his eyes, he's looking to see what's going on. He's getting a grasp of that situation. I think it's fantastic. So it's, again, The direction, the writing, it's absolutely brilliant in this, with spears. Because, I'm just, analyzing this properly now for the first time, you could say. And I'm just, like I said, my screen now is paused. Lipton looking at him, and you got Spears. He's listening, but he's not looking at Lipton, but he's absorbing the information, but he's looking at what's ahead. And I think that's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I'm really enjoying this scene. And
Yes.
learning a lot more now, breaking it down. So is this I don't know if you've got a minute, three, it's 3 minutes 49 on your 5 minute segment. I don't know if you've got it yourself. It's just his eyes. Really great scene. And again, he's back in, he's listening, he's absorbing, he's looking where the guys are. It's just utterly brilliant.
And I mean, as Spears is also still on his way, so we see Martin screaming at Webb. He goes, "Webb, fall back! You're too exposed. Come on, Webb, let's go, kid." And as he's saying that, we see that Webb gets shot, and Webb is dead. He pulls him back, and Webb is gone. And then we see them, Bull basically dragging Percante out, and he goes, "Hang on, Perco." And we see that they're pulling safety, and then we see another artillery shot from the Germans. And you see, before you even get to the bale of hay, what you're talking about with Spears, you see one of the artillery shells hit, and there's an explosion, and then you see Spears just come out of that. Which again is cinematically, it's just amazing to watch it. Here you have, you might even want to look at it from a religious perspective. You have a savior, coming out of the fog, to go and help people, to help these men. And Spears doesn't even stop when an explosion happens right in front of him, and then he runs up to the bale of hay and just grabs Dyke, who is looking completely, incapacitated. And he just turns to him and goes, "I'm taking over." And Dyke like shakes his head a little bit, but okay. That's right.
He knows.
No, that's right.
I
That's
think I've
okay.
jumped
You jumped ahead,
ahead.
and it's exactly what you were talking about. I mean, you see that Spears is looking all around as he's talking to Lipton, which again is a great quality, not just for a leader, but for anybody. The idea of always watching what's going on in your surroundings, but here he's not only watching what's going on in his surroundings, but he's taking in the information in order to try and figure out what it is that he needs to do now. Like, what's the best way to deal with this situation?
No, absolutely. And I think that, as we've said, it comes down to direction, it comes down to writing.
Matthew
But I
Settle.
think, a shout out has to be done to the military advisors. It comes down to Dale Dye, it comes down to Freddie Joe Farnsworth, it comes down to, Mike Stokey, because they will have told him this is what's going on, because they read the script, they break it down, and they will identify what a military leader will do on the battlefield. What Dale did in Vietnam, what Freddie did in the first Gulf War, etc., or Freddie and Mike, sorry, Mike and Dale, sorry, in Vietnam, and Freddie in the Gulf, in the Gulf, first Gulf War, where that any writer, any director can tell you that, and as we've seen in some poorly directed World War II movies, is it's you don't you know yourself, there's a lack of authenticity there sometimes when it comes to military bearing or military action. But I think with this is why it was so good, is Dale Dye, is Freddie Joe Farnsworth, Mike Stokey, where they would have obviously added their opinion and gone, this is what you need to be doing. So this is what we've seen. And obviously this is where they work with the director and say, right, you want us to look good, you need that guy. And they will work with the director as well. So I think everything is per in terms of making a great World War II production, this scene alone captures it. Just everything, all the
100%.
working parts behind the scenes.
And as he's as Spears is looking around to see what's going on, then he says, "Sergeant Lipton, what have we got?" And Lip gives him a sit rep, and he goes, "Sir, most of the company is spread out here. First platoon tried an end around, but they're stretched out. They're pinned down by a sniper. I believe he's in the building with the caved-in roof. And he turns to me and goes, I want mortars and grenades on that building till it's gone. When it's gone, I want first to go in. Forget around. Everybody else, follow me. We go, yes, sir. And yeah, he looks around and goes, thank God. And, you know, then Spears starts rallying the troop. He goes, all right, third platoon, move out. Third platoon, let's go, let's go, let's go. All right, you heard the word. Second platoon on the CO. He goes, Sergeant Alley. Got it, Sarge. Okay, first platoon, move out. On your feet, second platoon. And, you know, they finally were able to take out the sniper. And he goes, move out. Get on your goddamn feet. Come on. Come on, Luz. Let's get the bastards. You know, and then the Germans shoot another shell towards them. And he goes, come on, move out. And he goes, take cover. And we see another shell, you know, hit nearby them. And go, go, go. Come on. Come on. Come on. And, you know, there's the way that Spears just takes command right at this point is just amazing. You know, I don't know if Spears or Winters is a better tactician on the fly. My impression based on what we see here is that Spears is better on the fly, but Winters might be better if he has a little bit of time to plan it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I absolutely agree. I think I'm just trying to think now back of Winters's. You know, we see him in Carentan when he's, you know, standing in the middle of the road, kicking people up to go. You know, he's obviously planned this, and you know, but what they're both very good in setting an example. I think both Winters and Spears. They're both very good at setting an example of what a leader is. It's do as I do, as well as do as I say, but do as I do.
That's right.
Follow me. Is what I'm thinking, and we see that in Carentan with him. We see it in Precourt Manor where he's going through the trenches, you know, and he's not even a company commander at that point. But he's got in mind, he's planned it, hasn't he? He's like just what you've said. He's very good, you know, planning something and then executing it because he's got that plan in his head where Spears, as we've seen, on the fly. You know, with this, he's just, you know, he had a career. He had a full, I believe he had a full career in the army after World War II as well, because he wanted that. You know, he liked that structure, and he was good at his job. And you know, the stories we heard about him killing one of his soldiers is true. You know, that did happen. We, you know, I've heard it from, you know, it's in the book documented. You know, people have done the research on it, and you know, I suppose it's. I don't. I was probably saying our conversation probably on again. You know, but he's got standards. He's got expectations. And he will, you know, he wants you to, you know, he's not expecting you to be him, but he's just expecting you to do your best. Just follow me, and we'll get you there. And I think that's what Spears is. Yeah, we could talk about these leadership styles all day.
For sure. And again, with Spears, I mean, you also can see it just by the way that they portray this final minute of this 5-minute segment. You know, that the fact that Spears has now given new commands has completely turned the tide on everything that these men are going through, because you know they all now have hope, and they're also given a reason, you know, to rally, and they just charge ahead, you know, even when all these German rockets are falling near them. You know, it reaches the point by the end of this 5-minute segment that the Germans are getting scared by the fact that these men are running toward them and are completely rallying.
Absolutely. It's a sense of direction as well. You know, they would be better being, you know, they're better, you know, no doubt they're probably better trained troops. Okay. They might not have the 4 or 5 positions, but they, you know, they just want, tell me where to go and make me understand why we are doing that. You know, I wasn't infantry. But you know, certainly from my term or time in the military, is you want a sense of direction. Just give me a direction of what we're doing or where we're going and how we're going to do it, and give me that confidence that I can believe in you, and once you have that, you can follow it. And I think that's, they didn't have that with Dyke, but they've got it with Spears. In a very short period of time, we see that, you know, what are we doing? How are we going to do it? Let's go. Give me the, you know, give me the confidence to believe in you, and we'll follow. And he shows it with linking up with Fox Company.
I company.
I want to say
I company.
I Company.
Yeah, that'll be tomorrow.
You know, so it's that, you know, and by obviously that's jumping ahead with your next guest, but by seeing your leader do that, something that he didn't have to do as well, and they're like, this is our guy, this is our Winters. Obviously, you know, they didn't have an opportunity with Moose Heiliger or a very long with Moose, but they've got, you know, because apparently from what I've been told, Moose Heiliger would have been a very good officer, company commander for Easy Company. So yeah, I mean, Meehan would have been a very good company, you know. Well, Meehan was a good company commander for Easy Company as well. Because they want, you know, that's what you want, isn't it? I think like with anything, you want to believe in your leader.
Correct.
You'll either rally against them or you'll just fall apart. And I think we see the rallying against them with Sobel, who, you know, they created a bond. They became better soldiers because of his training regime, you know, of how he was. And then when they got Meehan, they found somebody they could believe in. And obviously, you know, we're at a stand, you know. And yeah, so no, it's really interesting. Yeah, you could talk about this all day on leadership. But no, it's a great scene, great scene.
Most definitely. And as the Germans are running away, that's the end of this 5 minute segment. So is there anything else you wanted to point out about this 5 minute segment?
No, obviously, you know, I have been to Foy, Foy, sorry, and there are some great maps online if people wanted to research the battle. I think they're on the NARA, NARA website, where you can pull down the maps of around Bastogne, where you can sort of see, you know, this is the 17th of December, 18th, 19th, you know, they're on there. But also, they've got the, so excuse me, the Carrickey scrapbook as well, with the overlay in maps as well. I sadly had to get rid of mine a couple of years ago, and I'll get it again, you know, because they're fantastic, and I wish I'd done something to have, you know, photocopied the maps, because you can get around how things were at that time and where the, you know, the set off points were, etc., and sort of get a rough idea. I mean, even visiting the town of Foix, it's a very small place, you know, you're in and out of it in seconds. But it's utterly fascinating. And there's a, again, I'm jumping ahead here, and I don't know, you know, who we've got on for this one, but
That's okay because you're not going to be up to
there's a photo,
that's
there's actually
probably
a couple of
okay.
photos. There's a crossroads, we see a church, it's in Foix, and the sniper or whoever, I mean, there's a full story behind it, but the crossroads of where, you know, the shifty and the sniper, it's there. You know, there's a photo of it, January 1945, where there's an ambulance outside it, and there's a house across the road. Obviously, you can't see the house, but that came under substantial damage as well. And it's now a B&B or an Airbnb. And, you know, I went there a couple of years ago when, you know, when I was with Chris Langlois and Lucy Jean, who played Nurse Renee. I was staying somewhere else, sadly. I was originally staying there, and then I was going with some other people, and we were staying somewhere else. So, but that street alone, that crossroads alone, has some incredible history. A few minutes, as you go past the house, you've got the former, you know, American cemetery, which got moved to, I want to say, Henry Chaparral or Luxembourg, possibly. I want to say Luxembourg, where they were originally. And then you go a little bit further down, you've got the American cemetery on the left. So it's an, that bit of land, that very small area, has an incredible World War II history. You know, not just the advance of easy company and shifty, but just so much more. So yeah, it's an incredible place to visit, and for anyone who hasn't been, I highly recommend it.
Very cool. So today's segment is Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top five movie brothers. Leighton, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I'm going to say American History X, Edward Norton and Ed Furlong. You know, you've seen bad become good to try and influence the younger brother to say, hey, this is not the path you want to go down. Which I think, you know, we kind of need, you know, for me, it's that type of person, not trying to how the word this right. But you know, for me, it's having somebody to guide you in life is what we need, you know, not necessarily his past or, you know, former beliefs, but it's, I suppose it's, he knows he's done wrong. He knows, you know, they've got a different perspective on life, after a few instances, and they're trying to guide someone. And I think, you know, for me, it's where I'm, you know, it's how we could do with somebody like that in life is somebody to guide us. And you know, he's doing his best. I think that's my angle on that one. As well as, you know, thinking of brothers as well in movies. I'm gonna go then it's Mike and Brandon from the Goonies.
Oh, great one.
Two very different people. You know, you have one guy who is discovering women or girls, and the other guy is enjoying life as a teenager, exploring. You know, he's a kid at heart, and you know, winding up the older brother, you could say. You know, or his friends are winding up the older brother, and he's just trying to make sure he doesn't get beaten when he, you know, when the friends have gone. Twins, Arnold and Danny DeVito. I don't know why, it's just so random. I think it's more so, you know, when I've been out with friends, and we may have, I don't know, just used a bit of a joke of we were like twins with people when we've been chatting, and we were like twins, you know, I'm Arnold and he's Danny DeVito, that sort of thing. I think it's just more of a memory one for me of just funny times with my friends. And I went down the Addams Family route with, I suppose it's brothers, but it's brother and sister. It's Pugsley and
Ah,
Wednesday.
from the Abbott family.
So
Okay.
it's more of Pugsley, even though he's like the quieter character. And Wednesday was the standout character, but it's just again the dynamics of the just quietly evil, quietly plotting. Yeah, I can't put any relation around that one. I don't know why it's number two either. Maybe I should have been number five.
No, doesn't matter if you. The truth is, I mean, the connection between Pugsley and Wednesday has been deepened, over the years in the canon. So, that makes sense.
And I'm gonna go Warrior with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton. Just it's a great movie. The brothers, they're diff, you know, they've come from the same background. They've both done different things, but you know, again, but on their journey, they were fighters. They were warriors, you could say. Very cheesy throw in there, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, one is struggling. I think, you know, if I remember rightly, the Tom Hardy character is struggling with life.
Well, they're both
Yeah, I
struggling.
mean, with Joel,
They're struggling with different things. One is struggling more financially, and one is struggling more,
mentally, emotionally, yeah.
socially.
And, you know, dealing with the drunk father, which is played excellently by Nick Nolte, who I love.
For sure.
You know, him in, you know, my friend Henry Sledge. He does an excellent, you know, thin red line Nick Nolte imitation, you know. When he's telling the chap to, you know, do the attack. Again, leadership. You know, it comes down to leadership, two different styles of leadership. But no, with Joel Edgerton and yeah, Tom Hardy, you know, I haven't watched that film for a little while, but it's a fantastic film. Yeah, they're both struggling. You're right. One's financially, one's emotionally. They've come from the same background, but one, you should believe, you know, one's happy because he's got a family, but he's like, I've got to provide. And he's just, the other one's just trying to find himself. And they end up back in the ring, and I suppose reconciliation, you could say, if I remember rightly. And they're dealing with, you know, a father who's an alcoholic. So it's, yeah. Again, yeah.
Yeah, I actually just rewatched it a little over a month ago because it's come up a few times here. So I decided to check it out again.
It's a great, yeah, it's great. I watched it in Afghanistan. I think I watched it in the cinema. And I watched it in Afghanistan a few months later. And the cinema wasn't packed out either. There's very minimal people in there, which is a shame, really, because it's such a great movie. And then somebody added on a hard drive. Don't know how, but yeah, I was able to, watch it where I was again, and just thought this is such a, again, just reminded me of how great a movie it is. I think it's on Netflix here, so I might have to rewatch that as well. But no, yeah, that's
Yeah.
it.
All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. And now we will play the daily game of Name That World War II Movie. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get this time. Around and around and around the wheel goes. Yeah, I don't think you're going to know this one. I
Say again.
said, I don't think you're going to know
Okay.
this
Try me. Try me.
Oh, we will try. We will try. Okay, this is a movie from 1959, and it is an Italian movie.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't know that one.
And it's about a con man who is arrested by the Gestapo and is coerced into impersonating a partisan leader in order to try to expose the resistance. And it was directed by Roberto Rossellini. And the thing that always jumped out at me with this one is that the German commander is played by Hans Messmer, who played von Luger in The Great Escape just 4 years later. You have any idea what this movie might be?
No clue.
It's called General Della Rovere. I didn't have very high expectations when I saw it, and I really enjoyed the way that they did it.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of foreign language films, but this
Yeah.
one really got me because of the way that it portrayed, the Italian resistance. So,
Probably quite
yeah, that's
undermentioned. I don't know much about the Italian resistance. I probably know more about the French and the Belgian. With the Italian, I don't think I've really seen much of it mentioned, to be honest. So that's quite interesting, that. I'm just trying to look now. Is his daughter Isabella Rossellini?
I don't know.
Oh,
I
okay.
think she may be. I do believe there is that possibility, but it is also possible that the name Rossellini is like Smith or Jones or something like
Yeah,
that.
could be.
I don't know from that perspective.
I'm just looking
No,
now.
that way. Oh no, Isabella Rossellini is his daughter. Yes,
Wow.
there you go. Yeah, he has a whole bunch of seven children: Nora
He's done quite
Rossellini,
well.
Renzo Rossellini, Marco Rossellini, Robertino Rossellini, Eselto Rossellini, Gil Rossellini, and Isabella Rossellini.
I always remember it from Friends when she
Yes,
walks into the
that
cafe.
she's on his list.
No, but what I did see, I did a social media post about a young Anthony Hopkins, and I was trying to look for films to sort of reference him as this is what he's been in, etc. Then and now of his a school photo, an old school photo of his, and the location, which is now apartments. And found it quite interesting because I hear of, Robert Carlyle playing this chap. I hear of, there's another one, the German one. But I saw that there's a movie where called The Bunker, and Anthony Hopkins is playing Hitler. So
Okay.
it's, I haven't seen it yet, but it's certainly one. And I don't know if you've seen it yourself. And, I read his
It's. I mean,
biography.
I've definitely heard of it. Whether I've seen it or not, it might be something that was on my list that I never got to.
Yeah, having read his autobiography recently, Anthony Hopkins' autobiography, that is, he
Yeah.
never
No,
mentioned it.
I haven't seen it yet.
But no, so yeah, it's certainly one I need to look at. It's a World War II movie as well. I'd be really interested to see, what his portrayal is like. I mean, like it says, there's Robert Carlyle, who has done you know, who has portrayed him. There's another one as well, the German one. Oh, I can't remember. It's Downfall, which is an excellent movie.
Yes.
Again, you know, that was an excellent portrayal. Because you see, you know, so yeah, I'm really interested in, you know, the bunker now and seeing where I can watch this.
Yeah, you've gotten me
Yeah, really.
you've got me interested in it.
Well, I think, you know, looking at the cast as well, I mean, yeah, just having a look at it now, but certainly, yeah, it's got decent rate. Yeah, it's got, I'd say it's got a pretty decent rating, 6.8 on IMDb. So yeah, it's certainly one I'm gonna have to look at now in terms of World War II films. But I recently watched, you know, 633 Squadron, again after, you know, several years, recently, and I forgot how good that was. War Lover again, another one with Steve McQueen. Not some great movies out there, and they're not necessarily modern ones either. But yeah, bit of a random tangent.
All right, excellent. So, Leighton, you want to once again tell people where they can find you?
All the socials, We Happy Few 506, and that's it. Yeah, you know, there's, as I said to you last time, you know, currently, you know, focusing on doing then and nows, of various sites in the UK, related to World War II or even history slash pop culture, with Band of Brothers. You know, haven't gone to where, you know, the village where they filmed the Oldbourne scenes.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Midnight. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviearoundmidnight.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundmidnight@movierob.net. So, Leighton, thank you very much once again for joining me. This has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed this a lot. I hope you have too.
That was kind of fun.
All right. So I will be back tomorrow with another guest, but until then, hurry.
All right.